Guys, it was a real honor to be asked to give a TEDx talk in Chicago, Illinois, where I talk about connecting the dots of my past to enjoy my present and accelerate my future. Ralph Waldo Emerson shows up a few times as well.
All right, thank you. I'd like you to look to the person that's sitting next to you. If you're not sitting next to someone, just look at yourself. And tell them one thing that you appreciate about yourself. We're going to take about 10 seconds, so go, whatever comes to mind. All right, all right. So, all right, guys, stop talking about yourselves. How did that feel? Weird. Good. What kinds of things did you say? Was it difficult for you? My guess is that it was fairly difficult for most of us, including myself. In fact, before preparing the remarks for this talk today, I had never told myself, Brian, I appreciate you. Which is particularly strange because I thank people all day long that I don't know. Someone opens the door for me, thank you. The server brings me the check at the restaurant, thank you. Cashier hands us our groceries at the supermarket. Thank you. But when it comes time to thank ourselves and show appreciation to ourselves and those people that have been most influential in our journey, it can be difficult. We're going to explore why that is today, and I'm hopefully going to give you some tips that you can implement to make this a little bit easier. I've never been particularly fond of thinking about the past. I always felt like thinking about the past was kind of wasting the present and the future. Why would we think about the past when we have so much to do right now? And then I shifted the lens through which I saw the past, and I named that lens appreciation. And through that lens, I focused on two different parts, slowing down and connecting the dots. Slow down and connect the dots. See, I found that when I saw this past through the lens of appreciation, that it actually made my present life more enjoyable and accelerated my future, which is the opposite, if you think about it, than wasting time. So think to yourself, I appreciate you. So now that I've slowed down and connected the dots, where did it start? Everything has a beginning, as we know. Mine began here. I'm 2 years old. I'm in a wicker basket. Voluntarily, okay? I'm not in timeout, for those of you that are wondering. Look at that face. That face is too happy to be in timeout. I loved hanging out in the wicker basket. When I wasn't in the wicker basket, I'm serious. I loved it. When I wasn't in the wicker basket, I was doing something else, following my mom around the house all day long, asking her the same question over and over and over and over again. And the question was this, Mommy, are you happy? With that face. Now, my mom is in the audience, so if you don't believe me, you can ask her afterwards. I'm not making this up. You see, even at age 2, I knew I wanted the people around me to be happy. And I knew I wanted to contribute to that happiness in some way. Fast forward 3 decades later, and I've literally made it my job to do exactly that. So how did I get from age 2 to age 31? Well, a lot of things happened. I'd like to share some of them with you through the lens of appreciation. Let's start with slowing down. When I was a 13-year-old boy, I grew up in the Midwest. I was doing what most 13-year-old boys in the Midwest are doing, I think. I was playing sports after school with my friends, hanging out with my dog, looking forward to the co-ed party during the weekend that we would hopefully play spin the bottle at, and pretending to inhale cigarettes that I actually hated. You know, it's like, oh, this is so, yeah, I'm cool, and you hate it. But I was doing something else as well. I fell in love. One day in a bookstore, I came across a quote by a man named Ralph Waldo Emerson, and that quote read, "To know one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have succeeded." It was direct, it was attainable, and it was perfectly aligned with my desire to make those people around me happy. I didn't know it at that time, but it would literally serve as a guidepost to my life. What do I mean by that? Fast forward nearly a decade later, I graduate from college. from Butler University, and I decide that I'm going to take an adventure and move to San Francisco. I'm going to leave all of my family and friends and move to the city by the bay, not knowing anybody. I get there. Now, I am from a conservative family in Peoria, Illinois. I arrive in San Francisco. Things look a little different. People are like smoking weed on the street. Clothing is kind of an optional thing. And anyone that's ever been to San Francisco knows what I'm talking about. I thought, uh-oh, what did I get myself into here? I went there to do a year of AmeriCorps. And so the first day I was assigned to a school, and I went into that school. And I went into the lunchroom, and I heated up my soup during our lunch break, 1 minute start. And as that soup was heating up, I slowed down. I didn't even realize what I was doing at the time. I slowed down. And instead of hovering over that microwave, waiting for the soup to heat up so I could eat it and run back to class because I was constantly in a hurry, I took a breath. I stepped back. And I walked over to the mailbox so I could start learning the teacher's names. On the side of the mailbox was a newsletter. And at the bottom of the newsletter was a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson that said, "To know one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have succeeded." Whew. Now, had I not slowed down, I would have missed it. The newsletter was gone a week later at the end of the month. I felt an immense amount of peace in this moment. I was exactly where I needed to be, and I would have missed it had I not slowed down. 6 months later, it was clear to me that I wanted to go to law school. I was particularly interested in a school out in New York called the City University of New York. It was focused on human rights and public service. I had a bunch of questions I wanted answered, so I visited the law school, and the final question I wanted answered was around the financial aid. The salary for AmeriCorps when I was doing it, no kidding, was $12,000 a year. So without financial aid, there would have been no law school. I met with the financial aid officer. Her name was Debbie, and Debbie is frantically crunching the numbers with me. We're trying to figure out. It's a relatively stressful situation. And again, not even knowing what I was doing, I slowed down. I looked behind Debbie, and on her wall, behind her head, was a quote. And I imagine I don't need to tell you who it was by or what it said. Yes, Mr. Emerson had popped up again. I got that money and went to New York. Again, I would have missed these moments. And at the time, I thought, wow, this is great. This is just, these are miracles. I can't believe this is happening. And they are miracles. But here's the thing. They're happening all around us, all day long. But we're just so connected to our technology and our fast-paced lives that we're missing it. Slow down. Life is beautiful when you can see the miracles happening around you every day. Remember that second part I was telling you about? Connect the dots. How did I go from wicker basket to stage? Again, a lot of things happen, but I'm going to tell you about a few of them. I was recruited to play football at Butler University. The only person that was more excited and more proud about this accomplishment than myself was my father. My dad was the neighborhood dad. He was so proud. He would tell all his friends I played college football, and it felt great. By my sophomore year, things were going well. I was making the traveling team. I was getting time on the field. Things were going great. There was one problem. And it turned out to be a big problem. It was a series of concussions. The first concussion happened back in high school. It was a minor concussion. The second concussion happened my sophomore year of college. And the third a few short weeks after the second. Here's how I felt. Everything was green. I saw a filter of green over everything. I was going to the wrong classrooms on the wrong days. And I was sick at night. But nobody knew. Because I was lying to everyone about how I felt. My coaches, my doctors, my teammates, my parents, I didn't want to let that dream slip for myself, and I didn't want to let down my father. I went home a week after the third concussion. We had a bye. We had no game that weekend, and the university was on fall break. I arrived home, and my dad called me out into the screened-in porch. He said, "Hey, Bri, how do you feel?" "Dad, I feel good." "I feel good," I said. In my mind, I'm like, "Your face is actually a little green, but I feel good." And he said to me, "Let me tell you what's going to happen first thing Monday morning. Okay? You're going to walk into your coach's office at Butler. You're going to shake his hand. You're going to thank him for the opportunity to play college football. And then you're going to quit. Because your mother and I never, ever want to see you in the same state mentally that we see you in today and that we saw you in last week." This was a difficult conversation. I knew it was the right choice. It had to be done, but I was devastated. I went back to college on Monday. I quit. The coaches sent me straight to the neurologist, who told me, son, you're one concussion away from, direct quote, washing dishes the rest of your life. My father saved my life. And with this new life, with this rebirth, I committed myself to a new existence. The first thing I did was I switched my major. And I was exposed to professors and mentors that saw the world very differently than I did. One of these professors' name is Fran Quinn. He taught a poetry class that I took my junior year. We were sitting around class one day, and Fran said to us, do something you would never dream of doing tomorrow when you walk into this classroom. And do not come into this classroom unless you're prepared to do so. What? What? This was the first time at age 20 that anyone had supported me in taking a risk to do anything that I wanted, something you would never dream of doing. Just do it. First time, age 20. I take that lesson with me every single day of my life. The second man's name was Scott Swanson. Scott ran the history department. He was a dear friend and mentor. And Scott said to me, Scott is one of these people that doesn't have a cell phone. Still, to this day, I don't know how you live without a cell phone. But he emailed me and said, I'd like to meet you for lunch. I want to hear what you're doing come May, come graduation. We met for lunch, and he said, what are you planning? I don't know, Scott. I don't know. He said, go to one of the coasts, San Francisco or New York. You do well there. Scott, I don't think so. All my friends are here in the Midwest. My family's here. I could get a really nice paying job downtown Chicago. Life would be comfortable and nice. And he stopped me and said, Brian, you can always come back. But I suspect you won't want to. At that time, I thought, yeah, it makes sense. I can come back. The Midwest will still be here. My family will still be here. But as time marched on and the more I contemplated this quote, I realized he wasn't talking about a physical location. He was talking about a mindset. The same kind of mindset I'm asking all of you in this audience today to think about. Think about your life right now. We're all doing fine. We have food in our system. We have a roof over our head when we sleep at night. We have jobs. We have clothes. If you live in Chicago, I hope you have a lot of clothes. We're doing fine. We can always come back here, so why not just give it a shot? I got that money at CUNY. I worked for Mayor Bloomberg on his reelection campaign and then stayed in his administration. But something inside of me wanted more. It was time for me to pursue my passion, which was inspiring people through my words doing this. So I took a leap of faith and left a good paying job for the unknown. At the time, I had a girlfriend, and I gave my 2-week notice, and I said to her, hey, I have an hour left of paid leave time. Should I use it? Should I toss it to the wind? What do you think? It's only an hour, right? And she looked at me, and she said, it may only be an hour, but it's your hour. It's your hour. Again, this is another first. It was the first time that I had seen my life, my time as an ally, as an asset in the treasure chest, because you can do a lot with 1 hour. So my wish for you today is to take an hour, your hour, and map out your life. Commit to slowing down and commit to connecting the dots. Because once you do that, you will see, wow, I'm slowing down to see that I am remarkable. And I am so appreciative of myself, and that feels good, and you deserve that. And when you connect the dots, you'll see, oh my God, I didn't even know that this person connected me in this way that led me to this place, this here. And then you'll appreciate these people and express your appreciation, and they deserve that. You see, had I not slowed down to connect the dots and see the world through the lens of appreciation, I wouldn't be here today expressing these thoughts to you in the way that I am with so much appreciation, had it not been for a mother who gave me life and taught me it's a good thing to want the people around you to be happy. My father who saved that life. My professor who said, take that life and take risks. But take risks with people around you that will support you and you so you cannot fail. A mentor who said, take that life and go and push and push and push because you can always come back here. You won't want to, but you can always come back here. And a special soul who said, take that life and soak up every single hour because you can start a transformation in your mind with 1 hour. And when you do, the quality of your life will improve immensely. And then your inner circle's life improves. And your outer circle's life improves. And all of a sudden, before we even know it, we become a dot in someone else's journey. Who becomes a dot in someone else's journey. Who becomes a dot in someone else's journey. And we change the world one dot of appreciation at a time in ways we never knew was even possible. All because of a simple shift. And that is an idea that brings me a tremendous amount of enthusiasm. Thank you.